A new book about the war on terror begins with this short sentence: "We are losing." In that book, The Next Attack, Daniel Benjamin and Stephen Simon write, "The number of terrorists is growing, as is the pool of people who may be moved to violence." The authors make the case that Iraq has become a laboratory for terrorists. Benjamin is senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. From 1994 to 1999, he was director of counterterrorism at the National Security Council. Simon teaches at Georgetown University and served on the National Security Council staff for 5 years. Benjamin and Simon's previous book was the bestseller, The Age of Sacred Terror. One of the measures of success that President Bush has used to show that we're doing well in the war against terrorism is that there hasn't been a terrorist attack on the United States since September 11th. You argue that one of the reasons why there hasn't been an attack on American soil since September 11th is that the jihadists are getting what they need in Iraq. What do you mean by that?
Well, Iraq, as we point out in the book, is the jihadists' field of dreams. It enables them to do several things simultaneously. First, target Americans. Now, U.S. forces have increasingly moved into a cantonment posture, which reduces their exposure to attack. So casualties are somewhat down, although the level of attacks is very high. But first of all, they can kill Americans. And secondly, they can humiliate the United States by demonstrating daily that it is not in control of conditions in Iraq.
How does the London subway bombing change the story of what the terrorists are doing and what we need to do to try to stop further attacks?
The London attacks exemplified a couple of developments. One is what we call self-starters. Yeah, these guys from Leeds and or the surrounding towns, none of them had been identified with the radical causes until shortly before these attacks. Not all of them were especially pious. But they had become so enraged by international events against the background of their feelings of marginalization within British society that they became easy prey for an ideology that spread not by word of mouth, but through the media. They also demonstrated the sort of transitional state we believe the jihad is in between the old centralized control of attacks, those that were ordered by the al-Qaeda of old from Afghanistan, and this self-starter phenomenon. And the link between these two phases in the London case lies in the way al-Qaeda, after the attacks, made use of those attacks to propagate its message. And the link is especially curious, I mean intriguing really, because they had obtained at some point, probably on a visit by the attackers to Pakistan, a videotape of one of the attackers talking about his intentions to carry out these suicide attacks. So, you know, there is still a residual linkage, but the recruitment of the attackers was entirely spontaneous. They recruited themselves.
You both believe that the war in Iraq has made us more vulnerable to terrorism and has increased the number of terrorists who would like to attack us. Did the Bush administration have any warnings that this might be a consequence of war in Iraq? Did they have any warnings of this before the invasion?
They certainly did. They did not ask the intelligence community what the consequences of the invasion would be, but the intelligence community did write a number of papers and issue warnings about the likely consequences of an occupation of Iraq. And according to our sources, none of this got any any real reaction, except one senior intelligence official told me he got one note back saying, oh, you guys are just way too pessimistic. You don't realize all the opportunities there that are out there for us. But no, this was definitely something that the intelligence community was deeply concerned about.
You think that one of the biggest mistakes we made in the planning of the war in Iraq was assuming that Americans would be greeted as liberators. Are there certain things, what are some of the things you think that America didn't plan for and therefore caught us in a vulnerable state? The things that we didn't plan for because we expected to have this really positive, welcoming reception.
Well, one thing was the decision to disband the Ba'athist Army, the Iraqi Army. If there was one single decision taken before we went in that had devastating implications for us, it was that. What we discovered interviewing very widely among senior officials who served with the Bush administration is that the decision to disband the Army was never vetted. It never went through the canonical policy decision-making process. This was a decision that was taken completely offline and with very serious consequences for the occupation.
Why was this decision taken offline?
Well, the run-up to the war and the post-war were handled as sort of proprietary matters, as the exclusive concerns of the Department of Defense and the Office of the Vice President. To bring us back to the news of the week with the Libya indictment, those offices wanted to make sure that the State Department, which was not viewed as loyal, and other parts of the government, for example, CIA, which was also not viewed as loyal, would not raise any objections to these policy decisions. And as a result, they just took place out of channels. You know, one of the interesting pieces of news recently was were the statements of Larry Wilkerson, who was Colin Powell's chief of staff and who was actually a source for our book, about a parallel process in the government outside of the traditional one involving the National Security Council, which brings together all the cabinet officials. And this parallel process played a vital role in the entire policymaking regarding Iraq. And we found lots and lots of evidence of that.
Scooter Libby was the aide to Vice President Dick Cheney. What was the Vice President's office's part in the lead-up to the war in Iraq?
The first was simply driving the train. And one of the things that we uncover in this book that I don't think has been discussed earlier was that the Office of the Vice President had a critical role in getting the government focused on going to war in Iraq far earlier than anyone has really discussed before. That is to say, they were meeting in January of 2002 about the possibility of going to war within 3 or 4 months. And this is extraordinary when you remember that we're already at war in Afghanistan in this period, and no connection to Iraq has been made in terms of the 9/11 attacks. The Vice President's office played a central role in constructing the justification for the war. The Vice President himself said on numerous occasions that there was a connection between al-Qaeda and Saddam. He continually spoke about a purported meeting between Mohammed Atta, the 9/11 conspirator, in Prague with Iraqi intelligence, although both the CIA and the FBI knocked this argument down. He continued to say it. The vice president played an absolutely critical role. You know, it was his speech in August of 2002 that really made it clear to the entire world that the United States was determined to go to war.
You've told us about some of the mistakes you think we've made on the war on terror. What is one of the things that you think we should be doing that we're not?
We've had a counterterrorism policy that is 100% offense. And that's okay to a point because you want to get the bad guys. We've over-militarized it in that we went into Iraq. But what we don't have is a political strategy to isolate extremists from moderates and to convince moderates that we're okay and they should be on our side. On the contrary, we've alienated a lot of moderates, and we've given a boost to the ideology of our opponents. So we need a radical redrawing of this strategy. And until we have that, and I don't think it's possible, by the way, until we're out of Iraq, but until we have that, the hole's just going to get deeper.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Daniel Benjamin and Stephen Simon are the authors of The Next Attack, The Failure of the War on Terror, and A Strategy for Getting It Right.